York City, relegated. Sunderland, relegated. Hartlepool, relegated. But Newcastle United have been promoted, even though Middlesbrough, tragically, have also been relegated. There is a shaft of blue in the sky for the northeast, and it's provided now you can see it over the hills and far away as champion winner Ian Lennox enters the area with joy and celebrations. And Ian, I have to break the news, Ben is not in the studio.
He's hiding somewhere, isn't he?
He claims he's got an exam, he claims
he's got... came on because of him.
I know that, Ian. You know that. But, I mean, last night when I said, but you know what's going to happen, Ben? You know what he's going to say? He said, well, give them congratulations. So it's been sent via a Manchester City supporting messenger to effectively turn around and say, you know, you have returned. And it looks as though Mike Ashley has proved to be Mr. Blue Sky, as far as Rafa is concerned.
Yes, apparently they've come to some agreement and he's going to stay, Rafa. And I've gathered there's a rumour going around on the national papers today that Newcastle are interested in two of your players. Fernandes and Mangala, is it, the centre-half, who's playing for Valencia at the moment?
Yes, well, we have...
You've paid £42 million for him.
Yes, well, you know, it's an impulse buy, Ian. Have you never actually sort of wandering around with a spare
foot? All change for your office,
exactly. You know, we've taken over from Manchester United as the Premier League's most profitable club, so it's good to
have
see.
Have you all, right?
Well, the recent survey suggested that, but still. Yeah. Hopefully we'll continue and manage to resume our position in the top four, unless, of course, Arsenal do what they've done in previous years and continue to actually win without a whole routine. Let's talk about the North East in general, because I have got to do a programme with Rob Nichols, known to this parish as the editor of Fly Me to the Moon, the Borough fanzine, and you know, he's not going to be happy even after the Southampton game, I'm sure. You know, and as I say, what odds would you have got on every club in the North East, i.e. professional club? I mean,
Are they promoted or going down?
Well, dropping. You know, as I said, Hartlepool, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, York City. Ooh,
yes.
You know, and just Newcastle actually going the other way. Strange times indeed.
Not very good ones for most of them, is it? But,
so many Sunderland supporters who would have been...
I can't understand about Sunderland is they've had this situation. They've been in this situation, I think, four or five seasons running. And they've done nothing about it. They got 6 points from us two seasons running. That kept them up.
Perhaps they were simply waiting for Middlesbrough to come up so that they could go hand in hand down to the championship.
For a derby match.
Exactly. Sort of a nice look forward. Listen, let's celebrate. Lincoln City promotion. You know, so Lincoln have actually...
They're actually in the Football League, now, aren't they?
As champions, they are in League Division 2, and the Cowley brothers
are
already...
That's wonderful, that is.
Right?
A really big jump, that is.
That plus the sixth round of the FA Cup. Not a bad season for the Imps.
Yeah, they must have made a fair bit of money on that.
Well, I'd put it this way. They don't have to accept mere smidgling offerings of £100,000 for a couple of their players. That's way out of order, etc.
Yes,
so you're into a different sort of area. However, exciting times. And do you think Newcastle will sustain it next season? Do you think?
Rafa has had his talks with Ashley, the owner, and he's been given promises about investment. Not just investment in players, by the way. It's investment apparently in the academy and this sort of thing. I think Rafa's basically going to be in charge of all the football side of the club.
It's his first championship since 2004, I believe.
Rafa's? I didn't know he ever had been one.
I think it was a Spanish side at the time.
Oh, yes, of course he did. Yes, he did win at the second division. Yes, he did.
But being obviously a keen European, I know that come Saturday, as we found out from Gabriella Peralta, there's only one place to be if you're in Newcastle and you're in the Ian Lennox household. It's around a television set watching the 62nd edition of the Eurovision Song Contest final. Isn't that right, Ian?
And you do like to poke the sticks at me, don't you?
I know you've been inviting Arthur round for a few bevvies, you know, and probably Irene as well, and you'll probably sort of be sitting down there saying, whoa, fantastic, you know, let's go celebrate diversity. And the good news, Ian, is that this week, no country music choice for you once again, but we have got the Romanian entry for you into Eurovision 27.
It's like going back to the 1950s.
You say that, Ian, but, you know, it's only time. And I feel in many ways what Ilinka featuring Alex Floria have actually provided with us for Romania's entry could be an outside bet, a very outside bet, because as we said earlier, the Midric Dry bets yesterday were so excited by Germany's entry that I think that's probably going to be a standard.
Well, Romania's got more chance than we have, haven't they? Especially with the Brexit thing going on.
We played Lucy for you last week, of course, Lucy Jones and Never Give Up On You. And we're not going to play it again, okay? Well, not today. No, we're not going to play it. But this one, Ian, prepare Ollie and Obo to actually effectively be mind-blown.
Ollie and Obo have left the house.
Well, they've come back because...
They tend to about 29 on Thursday, actually. I think it might be coincidental, but I'm not sure.
It's called Yodelit! Exclamation mark.
Oh,
that's
God.
Yodelit! Exclamation mark. Are you ready, Ian,
to
cast your creative ear on
this?
Exactly. I think this could actually be the accompaniment for Newcastle's Away the Lads Open Top Bus Tour, personally.
Hey, all you out there, wanna sing this out? You glow, you always run away, you always say no to the right things. Don't try to hide the light inside of you. Today might be the day when you make it, baby.
So bring it on, I'm a dreamer. If you don't believe it, come and see me, I'll teach you.
If you never try, you'll never be alive. You are gonna miss out on this ride. Of doing all this work you really don't want to be doing, but you'll be fine. It's time to feel alive. The start for reaching for the stars and keep on moving.
So bring it on, I'm a dreamer. If you don't believe it, come and see me, I'll teach you.
If you never try, you'll never be alive. You are gonna.
From the country that gave you Ceausescu and Ilie Năstase, that's Ilinka, Romania's entry into the Eurovision Song Contest 2017. Ian, blown away much?
Well, can I get this straight? It's a Romanian song.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sung in English with an American accent.
Yes.
And it's about yodeling, which is a Swiss pastime.
Yes. Yes.
Back, and there's some national identities going on there.
Celebrate diversity. That's
where's the
key
Romanian
thing.
In it?
You've got Ilinka, bless them, and Alexa Floria doing that.
I think if you dance to it, mind you, lose about 300 calories because it's a very fast beat.
Never let it be said we do not push those boundaries. Whether we play it again, of course, depends on how well they actually do. But I can see that, you know, the excitement that's there. Did Ollie Nobo return, by the way?
Okay.
Well, from the John Wenham Events Diary at the New Lincoln Theatre Royal on Saturday the 13th of May until Monday the 15th of May, Babe the Sheep Pig. Yes, when Babe arrives at Hoggett's Farm, he's taken in by the trusty sheepdog Fly and discovers a talent for herding. With the help of his adopted mum, our polite piglet soon wins over the most suspicious of sheep. But can a small pig make it in a dog's world? And when his farmyard friends are in trouble, can Babe save the day? It's not the movie, but it is the stage show.
The stage show
brought to life by a cast of West End performers in a show brimming with laughter, thrills, stunning puppetry and original live music. And no sheepdogs or pigs are indeed hurt in the production, so it's all good.
Have you got live animals on the stage?
Oh, no. It's always difficult to tell, but you can catch, quite literally, Babe the Sheep Pig at the New Lincoln Theatre Royal, both Saturday until Monday. That's the 13th and 15th of May. Tickets from £19. Inquiries, as ever, to the New Lincoln Theatre Royal, 01522 519999. It's top of the tree as far as John Wenham's concerned. I mean, it's the first thing you actually go to, and clearly that's the thing that's floated our umpire's boat this evening, and indeed today and this week. So there you have it, Yodeling and Babe Pig in the City and Newcastle United promoted as champions. Can
but
it get any better?
Not necessarily in that order, I think.
I'm just rolling out the possibilities, Ian. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have.
Marvellous. Do you do much walking?
I do, actually. Well, for my age, I do, yeah.
Because today...
I went on a walk to the coast, Monday it was. And I'm going for a walk on Sunday.
Well, new research by Headwater Holidays has revealed that there's currently a surge in the over 40s, that'd be you, Ian,
That's me.
Just about, yeah, spending time walking when they're on holiday, closely followed by keeping fit and being with nature. This is National Walking Month, and we're going to be talking with Headwater Holidays' very own Alison Scott to talk a bit more about how walking is really... National Walking Month.
Do they have a sort of national sitting down in a chair and eating
Look,
Christmas?
Now, Ian, please. Sometimes I think the facetiousness, even for a journalist, is just a step too far. You know,
it's people sitting in a room. It's like when you used to get these. You hear these jokes. I wonder where all these jokes come from. There's some little man, sad man, sitting in that thing making them all up. Let's have another week. What sort of week should we have this time? Let's have a National Sewing Week, and then everyone talks about sewing for something.
Yes, yeah, well,
it's ridiculous.
National Walking Month campaign to promote the benefits.
Oh, it's a month, it's a
exactly.
Big,
a campaign
a,
to promote
a
the
big
benefits.
Production is one.
The benefits of walking, and indeed encouraging Brits to get out and get active this year.
Fair enough, yes. A lot of people do walk nowadays, don't they?
So the next question, will you return next week?
Oh, yes, sir.
And you'll be pleased to know that we should also be connected with Los Angeles as well. So that's great.
Oh, Phil,
Phil Leonis will be with us too. It's just fantastic. We're wrapping up with the Beatles to take us around to the news. And after that, of course, more on National Walking Month. Happy trails, Ian. And congratulations to your lads once
Thank
again.
Thank you very much. Keep on walking.
Stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. The little children laughing at him behind his back. And the banker never wears a mask in the pouring rain.
And the weather today, highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade, and after a chilly start, it's going to warm up to provide a sunny morning, although it will turn cloudy in the afternoon. But you might well say that's perfect walking weather. Mind you, Marketing and Product Director of Headwater Holidays, Alison Scott. Good morning, Alison. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So the importance of walking, we were talking about it just before the news with our Newcastle correspondent Ian Lennox, and he was just astounded to realise that we've got a National Walking Month, which of course is what we're in terms of May time being National Walking Month, a campaign to promote the benefits of walking and encourage Brits to get out and get active. As far as Headwater Holidays is concerned, though, this particular research does suggest that actually more and more people, including those in the more chronologically gifted over 40 branch, are getting much more into their walking.
Yeah, absolutely. We've done some research for National Walking Month, and 70% of people over 40 now say it's a lot more important to them. They use it as a daily activity, and they enjoy it as well as it being beneficial. So it's definitely on the up. It's becoming a lot more popular.
It's also ecologically sound as well from that point of view. So, you're sort of putting difficulties into the environment and so on. Have we seen over the last couple of decades, as the centuries developed, that more people are actually walking than used to be the case?
Definitely. I mean, people see the benefits of it. It's also quite easy to do. And a lot of people, I mean, over 80% of people said to us they like it because they get outdoors. They don't want to be in a gym on a day like today. Why would you go on the tube when you can walk for an extra 10 minutes?
So let's talk about self-guided walking tours, because that's an interesting phenomenon, in which case you might say, well, you've got your mobile application on your mobile device, etc., and you're being guided from that point of view. Is it that, or is it just a case of where you get the map out and you can actually savour things without necessarily shooting past on either public transport or indeed private transport?
Self-guided walking tour or holiday is something that's organised really by people like us, by tour operators like Headwater. We do everything. We plan the route, itinerary, and we book hotels. So you're looking at sort of anything from a 3-night stay in the UK to a 10-night stay in Portugal. We book hotels, we move all the luggage, and we just leave you to enjoy yourself, essentially, to walk at your own pace, enjoying your surroundings.
In a sense, we could almost say it's a stroll as opposed to a walk, because there are different ways. I mean, there are people who do power walking, and there's a whole range of things from that. I suspect, Alison, from what you've been describing, this is more a case of, you know, just take your time and just sort of have a nice, gentle stroll and a walk through the whole process. And again, enjoy local culture, enjoy food and wine, not just in Britain, but presumably in other countries as well.
Absolutely. The whole of Europe, and we do holidays within the whole of Europe, but it's a balance. A lot of people say to us that it's such a great way to enjoy the countryside, to enjoy the culture. You're right, it's a stroll. It's not a marathon every day, and you have rest days in between. But you get to enjoy the benefits of walking, but you get to enjoy the local food and the local wine as well.
Presumably there are also benefits of health aspects as well. I mean, in terms of exercise, it's not a case of you're pounding the pavement like some crazed jogger, possibly leading to arthritis, but that's another issue entirely. But in terms of that, this is a way of actually ensuring that everybody's exercised, that really you're giving that gentle but important exercise right across the base.
Exactly. Walking has so many positive benefits. I think most people know of them now. They're so well publicised. It reduces stress. It's great for mental health. And long term, it's just a great way to exercise without, you know, hurting your knees or your back or anything else, like pounding a pavement.
I'm getting a sense, Alison, that clearly you have the evangelistic zeal for walking. Share with us any walking holidays you've taken in terms of where you've actually thought, I'm pleased we actually chose to do this as a walking holiday as opposed to an other form of transport.
Yeah, I definitely practice what I preach. I have done a lot of walking in the UK. I come from Chester, so we're very lucky to have Wales nearby, so North Wales, the Welsh Coastal Path. I've also walked in Africa. Actually, I've trekked up mountains. I've trekked up Kilimanjaro. And I've done some nice, easy, self-guided walking in the Dordogne in France and in Catalonia in Spain. One of the Headwater holidays, in fact, just to test it out, really. We need to know what we're doing.
So somebody who's listening to this might just be thinking about, let's go for a self-guided walking holiday. What are the key things they need to bear in mind? Is it a case of make sure you've got a rucksack to hand, make sure you've actually got some good, sensible walking shoes? Because clearly you wouldn't want to necessarily do a substantial walk in 6-inch heels, would you?
Definitely not.
I'm speaking for both genders here, because obviously you don't know these days. It can be both styles.
Self-guided walking holiday is a great holiday. It's like any holiday, and you don't need to think about much more except where you want to go and what kind of level you want to walk at. And then people like Headwater, like us, can help you with that. Do you want some rest days in between? How far do you want to walk every day? In terms of packing, we obviously help out. We can give you a guide. But it's not scary stuff. If you're going to go walking, you take your walking shoes. Yes, you have to have a day pack. We help you every step of the way. For a first-timer, we can help out and give advice. We have people who've been on 20 of our walking holidays, and they can give lots of advice as well.
So we've talked obviously about Headwater Holidays, and as Marketing and Product Director, you are the go-to person as far as this is concerned. Where can our listener go to for more information about Headwater and the unique aspects that can be provided for the walking aficionados?
Well, the easiest easiest way is to go to our website, which is headwater.com. We've got over 60 walking tours in the UK and overseas on there. We've also got some more facts and information about just the benefits of walking and National Walking Month, which we're proud to support.
And we hear a great deal, clearly, about cycle paths and so on, and rights to ramble and so on. Is Britain becoming a more walker-friendly country, do you feel?
I think, yeah, it's definitely... I think people have become a lot more walk-aware, yeah. And they're looking for paths off... You don't want to walk alongside of an A road or a big road.
I mean, exactly. You don't want to take a turn, yeah. And find yourself on the M1, really. It would be very, very unfortunate, really. But yes, in terms of that, there is a clear sort of pathway that's working through so that we can celebrate National Walking Month with due safety in mind.
Absolutely, yeah.
Alison, it's been an absolute delight sharing with your good self. I mean, I feel as though we've both done this interview probably sitting down. Although you might have been walking around the studio, actually, from our point of view, as we talk, which we really should follow through. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic connection with us on the programme today?
Yes, thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, I think the next thing is we should really do a little live wander around with your good self, Alison. Will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us apprised of what Headwater Holidays and their walking is all concerned?
I'd be delighted.
Well, I think the only one we can actually go to now is Memphis, courtesy of Mark Cohen. Alison Scott, Marketing and Product Director of Headwater Holidays, we salute you. Keep walking. Take care now.
Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain. WC Handy, won't you look down over me? Yeah, I got a first class ticket, but I'm as blue as a boy can be. Then I'm walking in Memphis, just walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? Saw the ghost of Elvis on Union Avenue. Followed him up to the gates of Graceland, and I watched him walk right through. Now security, they did not see him, they just hovered around his tomb. But there's a pretty little thing waiting for the king down in the jungle room. When I was walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? They've got catfish on the table, they've got gospel in the air. Reverend Green, glad to see you when you haven't got a prayer. But boy, you got a prayer in Memphis. Now Muriel plays piano every Friday at the Hollywood, and they brought me down to see her, and they asked me if I would do a little number, and I sang with all my might. She said, tell me, are you a Christian child? And I said, ma'am, I am. Tonight, walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis, off a field, walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain.
touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues. In the middle of the pouring rain.
Mark Cohen, Walking in Memphis. Time coming around to 13 and a half minutes past 9 o'clock. And still to come into the programme today, Luke Gamble will be joining us to talk about how social media can actually help to beat deadly lungworm. We've also got, hopefully, the return of William Sitwell. And as it is National Mental Health Week as well, we'll be talking to Sarah Baitup as well. As also, Paul Kay may well be sharing some thoughts with us about his latest single, The Code. Health Awareness Week, and to address some of the key issues with respect to this, including the fact that one in four suffering bereavement has been diagnosed with complicated grief. We're delighted to be able to welcome ACE spokesperson and indeed leading behavioural therapist Sarah Baitup. Sarah, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Now, recently, of course, Prince Harry talked openly about how he found it difficult to deal with grief, and this is decades after the event from that point of view. The human mind is a very fragile mechanism, and coping with grief is often seen as one of those areas where we like to have a kind of template saying, oh, it'll take about 2 years or 3 years, but actually the truth is there isn't a template.
There most certainly isn't. We're all different and we will all experience grief in very different ways. None of them are right, none of them are wrong.
In terms of the sort of way forward, I mean, again, this notion of complicated grief being a prolongation to the normal grieving process, is that something which, again, environmental aspects can trigger them off so that apparently everything seems normal, then something just occurs. It may be a memory, it may be a piece of music, it may be something that just triggers off the thing that can actually just restart the grief process all over again.
Sometimes, yes. You know, we experience all sorts of adversity throughout our lives, and there's no doubt about it. If you experience a plethora of difficult, challenging situations, that's going to mean that you're not as resilient as that you might otherwise be. So you're absolutely right. If you experience a grief reaction, somebody very close to you dies, and then maybe you go on and you experience a series of other things, or maybe that relationship that you had with the deceased person, perhaps that was a little more complicated, then that all of those things are going to affect you. And that's perfectly natural and normal.
Do we have a situation in the 21st century where traditionally, or at least in the past, there were systems in place, be they religious systems, be they institutional systems, which kind of were there to help people through, and maybe somehow in some ways we've kind of lost some of those systems?
Well, I've heard that quite commonly, and I guess, you know, our society is changing, and perhaps some people are more isolated. We don't have such close-knit families, perhaps, and some of us aren't as lucky to have close-knit families with grandmothers and mothers and parents who are there to support and assist us, and things like the vicar or, you know, your local priest or your church who might be there to listen. We all need a listening ear. We need somebody who is there for us and cares for us and is genuinely interested in us. And unfortunately, we're not all lucky enough to have that in our lives at the moment.
The tendency to block unpleasant thoughts out, again, understandable, but it's presumably not great in the long run. Does it tend to have the effect of bottling things up and then leading to a possible breakdown later on in life?
Well, you know, we're all hardwired to push away unpleasant sensations and thoughts. That's just part and parcel of being human. If you're scared of something, you'll tend to avoid it. If you have unpleasant thoughts in your head, you don't want to have those, so you'll push them away. If we experience a trauma, for example, and grief is another type of trauma, we have a natural tendency to not want to think about it because it feels unpleasant and it causes suffering, and none of us like to suffer.
The classic line of denial and anger and acceptance and resolution from that point of view, is that something which, although we've talked about there not being one size that fits all, is that a kind of process that most folk would tend to go through in your own experience?
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's a very textbook explanation of the grief reaction. But we all know, you know, if you have a cold, you're going to have a blocked up nose and a sore throat and a headache. But no two colds are exactly the same. We have similar symptoms, but they won't always follow the same path. So, yes, it's a textbook answer, but people shouldn't really expect to be always exactly like the textbook.
And returning to the notion of complicated grief, again, this prolongation of the normal grieving process, this is clearly something which isn't healthy for not only the sufferer, but also the local family, friends, colleagues and so on.
Well, grief, whether it's complicated or not, is always difficult, both for the person who is grieving and for those around them, because we don't like to see people suffer. And for most of us, we want to take suffering away. And the really hard thing with grief is that we all know there's nothing that we can say or do that's going to take that suffering away. So that can sometimes make us feel very, very helpless. But nevertheless, that shouldn't stop us from being there and listening, because listening is perhaps one of the most important things that we can do. And people who are grieving will often say, I can't keep talking about this because people are, you know, going to get fed up with me. So just being there and listening is really important.
Are there any cultural aspects to this in terms of, we mentioned clearly the notion of the British stiff upper lip perhaps has rightly been consigned to the historical past, but in terms of other countries, we often hear that countries in Latin Europe and Latin America, etc., are more able to kind of express their grief than Northerners, or is that just a case of, no, as the world proceeds to shrink, so does the commonalities between human beings?
Well, you know what? I think that grief is part of the human condition, and people will air their grief in very different ways, and they will be congruent with their cultures. But that doesn't mean that actually deep down inside us all, the experience is identical. It's just what we show everybody else might be slightly different.
And looking ahead, as we clearly needs to do, because it's a healthy aspect in any sense to actually focus on positive things, one hopes, are there any words of advice or thoughts or contact areas that you would suggest, Sarah, that people could, if they're listening to this and they may be sort of thinking, well, perhaps we should chase this up, where should they go?
Absolutely. So I think that the take-home message really is, if you're suffering and you've been suffering for a length of time and you're worried about your suffering, then the first person you should talk to is your GP. Your GP is going to be the expert on services that might be able to support you and will be able to refer you. Cognitive behaviour therapy is the treatment of choice for complicated grief and anxiety and depression. There is a fabulous service out there in the form of IAPT, Improving Access to Psychological Therapies, that people can access from around the country. And you can have CBT face-to-face, or you can have CBT online. And both are very, very effective methods of intervention. So seek help.
Sarah, it's been very impressive touching base with yourself this morning. Again, a very difficult and challenging issue, but I think you managed to address it carefully. Possibly the key word is the L word, listen. It's something we need to do as a society, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the tears come streaming down your face when you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be we I'm
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Huzzah, huzzah, and huzzah again. William's back with us. And where in the world do we find you this fine May Day, William?
Notting Hill. How can you cut off Takes You before it's gone to the good bit?
Well, only because, and Chris Martin would acknowledge the greatness and awesomeness that is your good self, William, and ultimately when time is so tight, you know, we need to actually say, go away, Coldplay. I mean, you can... And they're still playing, you see. So don't worry, they're still going on in the background. So we that's the important thing. Insects, William. That's what we left the listener on the horns of a cleft dilemma last week when I talked about the notions of eating insects. And you indeed said we should be eating more insects. And it is the season for insects. It's also National Walking Month. We had a big feature on how May is National Walking Month. And if you're not very careful, you could end up sort of swallowing all sorts of insects as you're walking along. What's your argument for eating insects as a nutritional source?
Well, we clearly, as a planet, as an entity in the universe, we eat far too much beef. We do eat too much meat protein. And as I think is now well documented, most people know about this, the conversion of grain to beef is a, it's not a very clever act. And the problem is that as the developing world develops and becomes more prosperous, the aspirations of a free and wealthy country are often, the badge of that freedom and liberty and prosperity is often measured in cattle and the amount of beef that you can eat. And the more beef you eat, the more the world's limited water resources are consumed. So, something's got to give. And actually, given the fact that it doesn't really matter how many people like me bang on about the importance of provenance and where your food comes from, but most people don't really care. So if you're going to have a burger, you don't care where it comes from. I think you should make it with a cricket, or at least half cricket, half cow.
Okay. So how do we actually start converting folk? Because I can already hear folk in canteens up and down the land, however you're actually listening to the whole service, going, how could you?
There's definitely, especially in the West, we need to go through a cultural shift because I'm not practicing what I preach. I'm as hypocritical as the next boring foodie. But I think that, there are people now who are cooking with bugs. You can get more bugs with food. I went to a Mexican restaurant in London the other day where they had chopped up crickets on their guacamole, and they were rather delicious. So we had to get over this kind of squeamishness. But I think really that there has to be someone's got to invent a product that is nutritious, but protein rich, that uses bugs, that doesn't make people squeamish. And I think burgers is probably the way forward in that you can put half the amount of meat into it. I think there are more and more manufacturers these days looking at how they can, get bugs into biscuits, cheese biscuits, and so on, because I can, I get it. I mean, it is a weird thing. We're quite happy to eat other insects of the sea, like crustacea, lobsters, other things with claws. But when it comes to the idea of, shoving a cricket into your mouth or a locust, we do get squeamish about it.
Possibly it goes back to Bram Stoker's incarnation of Renfield in the Dracula scenarios, where all he's doing is eating spiders and flies to gain immortality. That's not going to work. It's not an important way forward.
But it's just a mental thing. I mean, there should be no difference, really, between eating an insect and eating, a slice of what was once a live cow or a sheep. So it's a cultural thing. And unfortunately, I'm not the man to do it. But if you can, if I can get a biscuit or maybe cereals made of insect protein. The other great thing is that a lot of insects can actually grow and live on food waste. So it's a really good way of using up the world's resources. You know, if you can feed something on waste and you can then feed yourself on it and it's nutritious and it takes the pressure off the amount of cattle that are being bred, then that's the way forward.
I feel as though the message has been put out there in the same way as the message about square plates was going out there. I'm sure we'll continue to work on that. Got to ask you a question, William, though. As we're speaking to vet and broadcaster Luke Gamble shortly, you have a couple of dogs, I believe, in the Sitwell household. Do they actually have their own social media accounts?
I have a very beautiful red Labrador. His name is Cyrus. And yes, he's a star of Instagram.
Well, yes, hashtag dogs of Instagram attracts over 750,000 posts each day. So,
that's right, and if you look at Cyrus the Hound, you'll see my beautiful red Labrador there.
Just making sure.
I suggest you follow him.
At Cyrus the Hound, that's being added to the list, which already encompasses at Lord Frodo the Pug, which is our Gibraltarian Instagram account. So two worthy entries there, at Cyrus the Hound and at Lord Frodo the Pug, which is splendid. And clearly you're making the most of a National Walking Month by walking through Notting Hill, presumably, William.
Well, I'm on my bicycle, so I'm actually now heading towards Bayswater. I've got a white van heading at me because I'm going past the traffic jam, and I think he's going to win, so I'll go left.
Well, in which case, we'll say, have you had a reasonably interesting and safe telephonic link with us today?
It's been safe. I think to describe it as reasonably interesting, nothing fairer than the truth.
Marvellous. And can we look forward to connecting with you again next week?
I look forward to it, and I hope you have some more buddies in the studio, because we like your buddies in the studio.
They claim it's all due to exams and stress and such like. They were partying down so much with the Eurovision Song Contest preview party we had last night. It's unbelievable. But, you know, from the department of why didn't they ever enter this for Eurovision, happy trails, William, and here's some ant music to help you on your way. it's a dog's life. When it comes to the whole notion of canine care, I think possibly the fact that 20% of dogs actually have their own social media channel takes things to extreme. However, the ways in which technology can be used to actually support our canine friends and indeed help them to cope with the unfortunate consequences of lungworm can be addressed now by a vet, broadcaster, general all-round wonderful person, inspirational, astounding individual, Luke Gamble. How are you, Luke?
Ta-da. Wow. It's an intro. I'm great. Thanks, Alex. Really good.
Brilliant. Always a delight to touch base with a good self. Now, share with us, Luke, this recent survey that's been produced that 29% of UK owners actually follow other pet accounts on Instagram. We can plug into that, can't we, in terms of obviously dealing with dogs who eat grass, but in eating grass, they might be eating something else as well.
That's exactly it. I mean, I think it's a really smart campaign, actually, because it's the whole idea about getting people aware of lungworm, which is this potentially fatal parasite that dogs get infected by eating slugs and snails, you know, as you said, you know, not always on purpose, but sometimes just by accidentally ingesting them from drinking from a puddle or eating some grass or picking up a garden toy, you know, and what we're doing is we're basically tapping into people's general love of dogs. And as they share pictures on Instagram and chat about it, you know, we've now got an Instagram page at dangerous snail 25, where people can learn about parasites.
Well, I know that ICE producer Rachel has a wonderful dachshund or sausage dog that hopefully will be well on form as far as hashtag dogs of Instagram are concerned. I mean, over 750,000 posts every day. That's a way of actually filling in one's time at work.
I know. It is amazing how this sort of this social media enterprise has just boomed and blossomed. But I think it's engaging with all those channels is vital, especially when it's messages about health and welfare, about people or things we love, you know, and we all love our dogs. So this is just a way of saying, look, be aware of this, because lots of dog owners aren't aware of lungworm still. And of course, there's lots of different types of lungworm, and we need to focus in on the really serious one that can cause a massive problem, you know, potentially sudden death. And it's a question of saying, look, guys, are you aware slugs and snails are a danger? Chat to your vet about protecting your pets from getting lungworm.
Which brings us neatly round to at dangerous snail 25, which could well be seen as a sort of French secret service l'escargot code, but maybe not. But share with us, what does that actually help with us in terms of telling us about lungworm and indeed dangerous snails?
Well, this is the whole thing. Dangerous Snail himself, you know, he's a tricky character. He gets everywhere. And on his Instagram posts, you can see all the varying places he's been. And that gives people an idea of just how prevalent snails are and all the different situations and scenarios they can sort of exist in. And the parasite, Angiostrongylus fusarium, this particular type of lungworm, is not simply just in the slug or the snail. It can also survive in the slug or snail trail. So if a slug climbs over a garden toy or a snail does and it leaves its trail on there and a dog picks that up, it can still get infected with this lungworm. And the idea is that by following this Instagram page about dangerous snail 25, or going to the website lungworm.co.uk, people can learn about the dangers of this parasite, what it can do, how it's spread, and most importantly, how to protect their pet.
I was surprised to find that only 54%, that's just over half of dog owners, actually knew that snails can be dangerous to their pet, presumably in their own way, just as dangerous as giving them chocolate.
Well, this is it. I mean, there's so many dangers out there and there's lots of things and we can worry about absolutely everything. But what's quite nice is to know there's a risk and also know there's something very simple that can be done to prevent it being a problem. And that is really the big message. So it's upbeat. It's saying, look, guys, look, everyone, there is this increase in incidence of lungworm throughout the UK. You know, it is affecting dogs all over the place. But you know what? It's easy to sort. It's easy to protect your pet. Chat to your vet. You know, ask for some sort of monthly preventative treatment that can cover against fleas and mange and all the other bits as well as this lungworm. So it's not hideously expensive. And everything's OK. You don't have to worry about the slugs or the snails so much.
Luke, we mentioned obviously the ace dachshund of producer Rachel, but do you have any particular favourite pets and canines yourself? I mean, is there a particular breed? I'm always one for the old mongrel shepherd sheepdog sort of scenario.
But yeah, I mean, those type of dogs are absolutely amazing. I mean, that's the wonderful thing. All dogs have wonderful, quirky personalities. I've got Ridgebacks at home, which are sort of very big with long brown pointy noses, and they you know, prowl around our house and play with the kids. I've got four young children and I wouldn't be without them, you know, but they're fairly low maintenance ridgebacks, which is quite good because quite a busy lifestyle and they come to work with me and come to the practice with me and stuff, but they're hard to get into a small car. That's the problem.
Absolutely. I have to give a plug out, obviously, in Lincolnshire for the Lincolnshire Beagles as well, because they do wonderful yeah. things too. Okay, so just a reminder then, Luke, in terms of accessing these details and so on, is it best to go to Instagram? Is it best to go to Facebook? I mean, which way would you point our listener to?
Well, in the modern age, you see, there's all these options. The website is lungworm.co.uk. Instagram is @dangeroussnail25. And, yeah, it's all about uniting in the Act Against Lungworm campaign.
Ben, Luke, it's been fantastic.
I'll be anyone you want.
We'll get ourselves sorted. Luke, it's been fantastic touching base with yourself. Have you had a reasonably interesting and healthy telephonic link with us today?
It's been awesome. Thank you very much.
So hopefully we'll be able to connect with you again in the not-too-distant future.
It's all downhill from here on today.
Oh, Luke, it'll be splendid. Take care. Speak again very soon.
All the best.
Bye.
Cheers.
For now.
Bye-bye.
And from looking after your canine, we're delighted to actually move to a gentleman who is just a musical genius, defined as producing what Tony Visconti has said is really beautiful music. We're more than happy to actually say, Paul Kay, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks.
Excellent.
For
A genuine delight. Now, you're one half of Glitch Code, and that was obviously provided a wonderful debut album with Gifted_Damaged. Now you're going solo. Omerta is an album which is about to be released, and we're about to hear actually one of the excerpts of that called The Code. Share with us, Paul, your, well, not techniques, but your inspiration, shall we say, in terms of coming up with The Code.
Well, The Code is part, it's the Omerta album as a whole is a concept for a film. So what I did was flip the creative process on its head. So normally I write for TV and film as well, and I have to write to the imagery. So I thought it would be interesting to create the music first and then challenge people to create the imagery, either in their imagination or by physically making a film to do with each track. So each track on the album, 18 tracks, is a plot line from the film and a scene from the film. And there's a synopsis for that whole film behind the album. So it's like a multimedia kind of experience.
Historically, from a composition perspective, musicians have clearly been influenced by a variety of areas, whether you go back to the work of Johann Sebastian Bach and the cathedral at Chartres and a whole variety of other aspects, or whether it's a case of you have a kind of sponsor who's effectively saying, we need another Requiem now, Wolfgang, let's go with it. In the 21st century, I mean, you mentioned movies and clearly the power of film, and films have never really been silent. There's always been a musical soundtrack of some sort accompanying them. Is that something which really is essential, and more directors have acknowledged and indeed continue to acknowledge the importance of a good soundtrack to a film?
Exactly, and I think a good soundtrack can actually make a film. If you think of films like Reservoir Dogs, 2001 A Space Odyssey, the soundtrack is part of that film, it's integral to the film, and I think it can really help tell the story of the film.
Well, of course, we were talking earlier about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and that's a whole soundtrack in itself, really. But let's move into an instrumental. Let's have 3 minutes and 6 seconds, to be precise, of absolute genius from yourself. Paul, would you like to introduce The Code for our listener, please?
Yep, this is The Code. It's the second track on the album Omerta.
And we'll be
enjoy it.
We'll be back with you after this.
Thank you.
whole new range of elements there from the point of view of The Code. And wonderful stuff, Paul. It genuinely is a delight, of unmitigated joy. But let's talk about Amerta, the album title, because our research has pointed out that this primarily comes from the Mafia. It's a code of honour that That's places right. importance on silence, non-cooperation with authorities and non-interference in the illegal actions of others. Was that a deliberate choice to actually say, I'm going to actually sort of bring in some interesting strands to Amerta as a theme in itself?
It was, yeah. So if you've seen the synopsis for the film, the film is about a small girl who witnesses a murder, mm. But the murderer is a priest hiding in plain sight. And the priest has links to the Mafia, and he swears that and her family to Amerta, which is the vow of silence. And then the film follows the story, and the album follows the story of that girl growing up and trying to break that vow, but worried about the safety of her family and other things in the story. And there's a twist at the end, which is why the last track is a reprise of Amerta, which I won't give away at the moment.
No spoilers, please. Exactly. But the good news is that together with Lawrence Stevens, who of course has got to work with the Eurythmics and Muse to his credit as well, you've got an additional special physical pack for the album with a 44-page booklet as well that's involved.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, so each picture in the booklet is an imagined scene from the film. With quotes of dialogue from the film in the booklet, which as you read through and you read the synopsis at the beginning, gives kind of an overview of the story, and it lets the listener, as they listen to each track, imagine what would be happening in a film based on the tone and the speed and the tempo, etc., of the music. So it's interesting if you hear deep cellos that you think horror films, if you hear Mike Oldfield's Introduction to the Exorcist, you think horror film, also exploring what is it about music that makes people think different things.
It's interesting you mentioned Mike Oldfield, because I've always felt with Tubular Bells, for me the first thing that springs to mind is the Apollo moon landing program, but that's a different line. So again, it's that whole notion, clearly The Exorcist is very
the
much to the fore
is
as well.
Yeah, if you think of Tubular Bells, you think of The Exorcist, and that's the link between, again, film and music that inextricably tie to one to the other.
When all said and done, Amerta is rolling in melodic invention and cutting-edge arrangements, ripe with sonic imagery and intrigue, which is wonderful. Where can people find out more details about Amerta, Paul? Is it simply a case of going to paulk-music.com?
That's correct, or iTunes or Amazon or Spotify. It's available on all the main outlets. And there's also Paul J.K. Music Facebook page, where there's lots of the videos that I've made to go with the albums. And there's my YouTube channel. And on the YouTube channel, there's an Amerta channel which has a short film to go with every track on the album, which tells some of the story.
Well, the album, as I say, has been out now for a few months and is well worth accessing. Paul, have you enjoyed your connection with us on the programme today?
I have. It's been great, and thanks for having me on.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again and talking more about music, magic, the movies and other things?
Certainly. There's a new album coming out next January, and there's a new Glitch Code album on the way as well.
Well, it's just getting... It's one thing after another. What a wonderful way to actually wrap up the production. We just say thanks to Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Alan Stevens in the Forests of Dean, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, in London, Ian Lennox from Tyneside, and of course, the walking enthusiast and managing director of Headwater, Alison Scott. Clearly say thanks to Sarah Baitup for her insight into National Mental Health Week, and Luke Gamble for Pets. William Sitwell from the perspective of eating ants and insects, and nutrition, and of course wrapping up with the legendary Paul Kay. It's been splendid. More splendid things are coming up as far as Siren is actually concerned during the course of the day. After the news, we've got the Burton Hatho School Classic Rock follows Legends on Siren, and actually Sound and Country Vision with Tessa Snott is on at 7 o'clock this evening. Paul, thank you for staying with us from that perspective. You might as well join us in our final wrap-up as we head towards the news, etc. All we have to say is a happy farewell to everybody. So after three, basically, a one, a two, a three. Farewell.
Bye, everybody.
But exactly. You see, we get there in the end. I knew, Paul, that rehearsal would work wonders. Really, it would. It would work wonders.